Blog Talk Radio.
Praise and thanks. Mojuba Akoda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun to all the God children, Mojuba Egun to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe-o.
Ashe-o. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights, the New Power Radio Network. We began UAC after the unjust Zimmerman verdict of July 2013 and are happy to be celebrating our fifth year anniversary with you here on the air Tuesday through Friday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. since 2013, and we could not do it without you. So please continue to support us and our sponsor, Manhood, Race, and Culture, headed up by my co-host tonight, Dr. James Jones. You can find Dr. Jones on Facebook as James Jones, as well as a like and group page for Manhood, Race, and Culture, and on the World Wide Web at manhoodraceculture.com. Also support Arlie Gordon of Unity Design. Unity is spelled U-N-I-T-E-E. Reach out to Brother Arlie on Facebook as Arlie Gordon II and on the World Wide Web at unitydesign.com. And last but not least, we want to always remember to never forget our beloved brothers and sisters who are behind enemy lines and the families and loved ones and friends that they represent. So please reach out to Unheard Voices, the Free Alabama Movement and the Free Ohio Movement on Facebook and on the World Wide Web at freealabamamovement.com and freeohiomovement.org. So as a reminder, we do have an active Give Me 5 campaign going that you can make a $5 contribution via Cash App at $QueenTahira on the World Wide Web on our GoFundMe page for Sign of the Times, and that's Sign O the Times. And you also can mail a contribution to our Cincinnati, Ohio address, which is 1623 Dalton Street, D-A-L-T-O-N, number 14939, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45250. Again, our mailing address is 1623 Dalton Street, D-A-L-T-O-N, number 14939, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45250. And also, please don't forget to check out the Redistribute the Pain campaign on WordPress at redistributethepain.com and find out how you can get involved. And if you've lost track of a loved one, a family member, or friend who is behind enemy lines, reach out to us as well, and we can help you aid and assist in finding them behind this, behind the walls and behind enemy lines. So I want to welcome my co-host tonight, Dr. James Jones. Greetings, Dr. Jones. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good, Queen. I'm good. I'm doing good.
Ashe. Yeah, we took a slight pause for the cause last week, so I'm excited to be back this week and looking forward to tonight's conversation. So what's on your mind? What's going on?
You know, I got a whole lot of things that's on my mind. I'm back at work now. And actually, I'm sitting in my office right now and dealing with a whole lot of the dynamics that seem to be endemic with the arrival of the new school year, and also, you know, the fact that I work at an HBCU, to have a situation occurring where, if we're going to be honest about it, there seems to be a hostile takeover occurring on the campus, so to speak, where you have certain segments of this community that are not willing to work towards the what I would term the education and illumination of the Black nation. And I think that these feelings were really flared up for me by a recent video of a gentleman who apparently was a some type of missionary working in Uganda, who cut an absolute fool in regards to how he treated the wait staff at a hotel that he was residing at that moment. And those two events kind of combined together to put me in a mindset of really reconsidering the whole idea of what is the role of a host in a situation and what is the role of a guest. Because I'm seeing a lot of Black folk who are hemming and hawing, they're accommodating to behavior and actions and thoughts that they definitely would not put up with if they were coming from individuals who look like them. So that's kind of where my mind is at between that and, you know, in many ways, just the entire political climate, which is allowing things to occur that would never be allowed to occur if we were talking about Black leadership. So that's where I'm at right now, and I actually have someone knocking on my door. So I yield with that, Queen.
Ashe. I was able to find the video that you tagged me in for tonight, but I'm in the process of actually converting it over. So do you want to take a break while we answer the door, while you answer the door real quick? Because I can, if you like.
Yeah, let's take a real quick break. My coordinator,
okay.
Ron Goodwin's at my door, so.
Ashe, hang out with us, everybody. You're listening to Sign of the Times Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by New Power Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Y'all want unconditional love. No doubt. Talking about the stuff that don't wear off, it don't fade. Now it lasts for all these crazy days, these crazy nights. Whether you wrong or you right, your mama can still love you, still feel you, still there for you, no matter what. To my truest thoughts, my truest feelings, all my peers doing years beyond drug dealing. How many caskets can we witness before we see it's hard to live this life without God? So we must ask forgiveness. Ask Mama why I got the urge to die. Witness the tears falling free from my eyes before she could reply. For we were born without a silver spoon. My broken down TV show cartoons in my living room. One day I hope to make it a player in this game. Mama, don't cry, long as we try, maybe things change. Perhaps it's just a fantasy, a life where we don't need no welfare. Where's she with our own family? Maybe it's me that caused it, the fighting and the hurting in my room crying, cause I didn't want to be a burden. Watch mama open up her arms to hug me, and I ain't worried about a damn thing. With unconditional love, things change, vision in the eyes to see. Though things change, the future's still inside of me. We must remember that tomorrow comes after the dark, so you will always be in my heart. Unconditional love, the lessons in your eyes to see. Though things change, the future's still inside of me. We must remember that tomorrow comes after the dark, so you will always be in my heart. With unconditional love, just got the message you've been calling all week. Been out here hustling on these streets, ain't had a chance to speak. But you know, with you and me, it's all G. We could never be enemies, cause you've been such a good friend to me. Where would I be without my dogs? No wonder why when times get hard, cause it ain't easy being who we are. Driven by my ambitions, desire higher positions, so I proceed to make tea eternally. And my mission is to be more than just a rap musician. The elevation of today's generation, if I can make them listen. Prison ain't what we need, no longer stuck in greed. Time to plan, strategize, my family guided me. We will make something out of nothing. No pleasure in the suffering. Neighborhood will be good if they can cut out all the busting, the liquor and the weed, the cussing. Send their love out to my block. The struggle never stops. The unconditional in the eyes to see. Though things change, the future's still inside of me. We must remember that tomorrow comes after the dark, so you will always be in my heart. With unconditional love, the lessons in your eyes to see. Though things change, the future's still inside of me. We must remember that tomorrow comes after the dark, so you will always be in my heart. With unconditional love, I probably never understand your ways. With every day, I swear I hear you trying to change your ways while getting paid at the same time. Just had a baby with the same eyes, something inside recently died. These are strange times. How come I never made it? Maybe it's the way I played it in my heart. I know one day I'm gonna be a star. My hopes and all my wishes, so many vivid pictures, and all the currency I'll never even get to see. This fast life soon shatters, cause after all the lights and screens, nothing but my dreams matter. Hoping for better days, maybe a peaceful night. Baby, don't cry, cause everything gon' be alright. Just lay your head on my shoulder, don't worry about a thing. Baby girl, I'm a soldier. Never treated me bad, no matter who I was, you still came with that unconditional love.
Let me now turn to our program for the future.
Economy right now, it's extremely supporting of the president and his policy.
FBI scientists have found chemical traces consistent with a bomb or a missile on a piece of wreckage. Police using clubs and tear gas against demonstrators.
So and a white fascist. Like they said, you're getting some of your own medicine.
Genocide. then the rest will fall behind. Tell me who's got control of your mind, your worldview. Is it the news or the movie you taking your girl to? Know what I'm saying, cause Uncle Sam got a plan. If you examine what they telling us, then you will understand what they planting in the seeds of the next generation. Feeding our children miseducation. No one knows if there's UFOs or any life on Mars, or what they doing when they up in the stars. Because I don't believe a word of what the president say. He's filling our heads with lies, got us hypnotized when he be speaking in cold words about crime and poverty, drugs, welfare, prisons, guns, and robbery. It really is us. There's no excuse for the slander, but what's good for the goose is still good for the gander. See,
I don't believe Rob Marley got his pants off. 31 years ago, I would have been a pants off. They killed you because they knew he had the answer. The views that you see in the news is propaganda. In my arm. I don't wanna die by a nuclear bomb. I said we all rush the Pentagon. Pull out guns and grab the intercom. My first words would be, I believe man made God. Out of ignorance and fear, if God made man, then why the hell would he put us here? I thought he supposed to be the all loving, the same God who let Hitler put the Jews in the ovens. We don't fall for the regular shit. They try to feed us all this half ass leadership, flipping position. They turn politician and shut the hell up and follow tradition. For your TV screen, telling lies to your vision. Every channel got some brainwashed cop shit to watch. Running up in niggas' cribs, claiming that they earned shots. It's a plot. But Buster, can you tell me who's greedier? Big corporations, the pigs or the media. Sign of the time, terrorism on the rise. Commercial airplanes falling out the skies like flies. Make me wonder what secrets went down with Ron Brown, who burned the churches to the ground with no evidence found. It's not coincidence. It's been too many steady incidents. It could have been the Klan who put that bomb at the Olympics, but it probably was the FBI. Deep at the court, cause if they make us all panic, they can start martial law. I don't believe Bob Marley got some cancer. 31 years ago, I would have been a panther. They killed you because they knew he had the answer. The views that you see in the news, propaganda. I don't believe Bob Marley got some cancer. 31 years ago, I would have been a panther. You killed you because you knew he had the answer. The views that you see in the news, is motherfucking propaganda.
System better than most groups understand the system, and with this realization, we attempted to form a strong political base based in the community with the only strength that we have, and that's the strength of a potentially destructive force if we don't get freedom.
Ashe, welcome back to Sign of the Times. Welcome back, Dr. Jones.
Glad to be here. Sorry about that interruption. We, you know, that's a discussion, a further discussion about this matter of black folk being disrespected in their own house, as if they don't even realize it's their house.
Ashe, Yeah, that was an on-time piece, too, by Dead Prez, you know, speaking about propaganda, because we definitely are in the midst of that right now, full force.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Dead Prez, you know, M1, we were on a panel together, actually, at my university, and, you know, beautiful brother, very, very, very beautiful brother. You know, very beautiful. That's all I can keep saying about him. They, you know, listening to that reminded me, took me back to my heyday of hip-hop and listening to Paris and how Paris would always interject speeches and things, snippets of speeches inside of his work. You know, I've been on this for, and it's truly ironic, you know, I have this, my wife says that I didn't develop insomnia, but I don't believe it's insomnia. You know, I just need 2-3 hours of sleep and maybe a good hour nap in the middle of the next day to make it through. But, I've been up for probably the past week, and I've been reading, ironically, the writings of Huey P. Newton and the things that, you know, Huey was proposing in regards to liberation, revolution, what revolution is, what revolution isn't, where the Panthers were and what have you. And, you know, it's been a very riveting reading, and it's one of the things that, you know, I always consider going back and reading foundational pieces that have been sat down for a long time is a very good thing because it allows you to become grounded in a ideological foundation that, you know, may have faded in your mind or may have become some portion of fuzzy in your mind. But, you know, Huey's works and his writings are still very, very, very relevant to what we're dealing with at this present moment in Black America. And I yield, Queen.
Ashe, do you want to read the piece for Manhood, Race, and Culture, or do you want to play the video first?
I think we might want to play the video first to give the listeners a understanding of what it is that we're talking about. It'll definitely contextualize it.
Ashe, so we'll be right back. It's a little over 4 minutes, but check it out. You also can see the actual video on Manhood Race and Culture, manhoodraceculture.com, also on Manhood Race and Culture liking group pages on Facebook and on New Power Radio Network, of course, for Sign of the Times. So check out the actual video, but we're going to play the audio here. You're listening to Sign of the Times. We'll be right back.
Security, hello, take it. KK!
Come here! You hate Jesus? You hate yourself? You hate Jesus? You hate yourself? You hate me? You disgrace Jesus? Huh? Talk.
Francis, watch out, Piggy.
Talk. Talk. Come on, bitch. Come on, whore. You open my fucking room, I'll fucking kill you in this. Sir, sir, he has disgraced Jesus. He has disgraced Jesus. He has disgraced Jesus.
Francis, umpige, toka mbele yake.
Toka. I am not going to tolerate no more. Jesus is not going to tolerate. Yeah, feel me. Fuck Uganda. I've come to love Uganda. I've come to help Uganda. But Uganda hates Jesus to this son of a bitch. You understand me, brother? You understand me? Yes, sir, I know you do. No, no, no. You obey what I say. I don't obey you. You understand? Open my fucking room now. You understand, bitch? Nigger, bitch. Look at me. Look at Christ, who died for you. Look at me. Look at Christ, who died for you. Look at Christ. No.
No excuse.
Jesus is tired. Jesus is tired of your goddamn disobedience. Be obedient. Jesus is tired of your obedience. Disobedience. He's tired. No, you fucking come up. I don't calm down. You come up to the Lord Jesus Christ. You fuckers. Why have you hated Jesus? Why have you hated your own souls? You know it. But you refuse to repent and be saved. Motherfuckers, 3/4 of you are going to fucking die in 3 days. Give me my goddamn card to my room. This motherfucker better work. You understand me? Hey, bitch. Look at me, bitch. Yeah, you're afraid. You goddamn ought to be afraid, bitch. Nigger, bitch. You're not a human.
Respect you.
No, you don't.
Disrespect.
No, you don't.
You're getting your kick
out. No.
To make your kick out.
No.
Then you come fight me?
Yes, I'll fucking knock your fucking life out. Because Jesus is tired of son of a bitches like you. You fucking hate yourself. You hate your Yonda. You hate the Lord Jesus Christ. The Lord Jesus Christ is coming upon you with sword and fire. You fucking repent or you fucking die. This motherfucker better work. This motherfucker better work. Hey, you better get all this, alright? In the name of Jesus Christ, Uganda has come under our condemnation because they have hated themselves, they have hated their fellow man, they have hated the Lord Jesus Christ. You fucking record that, bitch.
Wow. I just don't know what to say behind that, Dr. Jones. And the video is even worse than the audio. I think you might be muted, Dr. Jones.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was listening to you. I mean, it's a thing for me that is unconscionable, you know. And when you consider the care, the consideration, the delicacy that black folk have when they are around white folk, let's just say it, you know, it's incredible. You know, there's a deep feeling in the pit of your stomach that black folk experience, regardless of their educational status or their socioeconomic reality, when a white police officer pulls up behind them. You know that their presence changes you, changes your reality. So that was that recording, and the listeners can definitely go to my site, manhoodraceculture.com, and find the video. The video is embedded in the story and the essay I'm getting ready to read right now. So let's go ahead and just jump into it, and that'll give us some time to talk about it and hopefully get some feedback from the callers. The piece I'm about to read is titled "The Ungracious Guest: Why Black Leaders Need to Draw the Line at the Rude and Offensive Behavior that They Have Become Accustomed to in Their House." And it reads as follows. When one considers the degradation that black men and women endure during their interactions with white society, it was crucial for them to have a good name that translated into respect and admiration among their community. A vital element in earning such respect was one's ability to serve as a hospitable host to guests and visitors. This tradition of hospitality was in many ways a cultural adaptation that served as a response to the pernicious impact that Jim Crow had throughout the nation. Every segment of black America realized that the safety of black travelers hinged
on their understanding of de jure laws and unwritten de facto segregation. When it came to traveling for blacks, Malcolm X's admonishment that we stop distinguishing the North and the South in his usual risque style holds true. Malcolm told blacks to, and I quote, quit talking about the South. As long as you are south of the Canadian border, you are South, end quote. Black travelers knew that Jim Crow's inability to slumber meant that his evil grip ruled both the day and night for black travelers, who soon realized that there were few dining options and even fewer housing options available to them. It took me years to realize that it was this history of traveling while black that explained both my grandparents' and parents' insistence that the frying of copious amounts of fried chicken was essential to our summertime jaunts to Memphis, Tennessee, as essential as gasoline. I now understand that there was an additional essential ingredient that we carried with us as we exited our hometown of Mansfield, Ohio. The adults demanded that we be gracious guests to those family members who were once again opening their homes to us. It did not matter that the alluded to family members were close relatives who hosted us several times a year. Being a gracious guest was neither curtailed by familiarity with the host nor to be compromised for any reason. Just in case you are wondering what a gracious guest is, it is someone who learned and honored the rules of the home that they were visiting. Trust me when I say that no two houses had the same rules. My Uncle Charles allowed us to have free range of the house, eat whatever we liked, and be as rambunctious as we desired. My Aunt Deborah, my mother's sister, had different rules that were often hard to determine. However, you were quickly made aware if you broke one of them. Notification of your transgression arrived when my aunt grabbed what appeared to be 2-foot-long wooden spoons and forks that moments before were decorative. However, if you broke one of her rules, she would rush to grab one of them off the wall to threaten you with it. I now realize that she never hit any of us with the objects and most likely got a great laugh out of how much she frightened us. My mother's aunt, Eddie Mae, had few rules except when big-time wrestling came on. At that moment, she would order us to a back bedroom to ensure that we did not interrupt her one guilty pleasure. When pro wrestling came on, my dear ancestor went crazy. In time, I learned that she was convinced that it was a real sport, not staged as the rest of us knew. I'm confident that you can understand how hilarious it was when we heard a huge crash and my favorite cousin, Charles Edgar, her grandchild, yelled for me to hurry from the bedroom. When I entered the living room, I was shocked to learn that this 70-something-year-old woman had gotten so wrapped up in the action that she managed to turn over the entire couch that was now pinning her to the floor. As a gracious guest, I did my best to suppress my laughter and help lift the couch up. As the couch was raised, she scurried from beneath it and jumped in a recliner to resume watching Big Time Wrestling. It is this understanding of what is and therefore what is not a gracious guest that informs my belief that both host and guest have a role in ensuring an enjoyable time for all. So I'm confident that you understand how disturbing recent footage of a white missionary working in Uganda was to me. It is no stretch to say that this man of, and I quote, Christ, end quote, behaved in a heathen manner toward hotel staff. I was not surprised by this man's erratic behavior that included him punching a staff member before attempting to kiss him on the mouth and lecturing the waitstaff on the virtues of white Jesus with a profanity-laced profession of his love for Christ and the need for Ugandans to bow before his God. This individual most certainly knows nothing about being a gracious guest. More disturbing than this white missionary's deplorable behavior is the inaction of the Ugandan waitstaff. Although I would love to say that I have never seen such behavior before, such a statement would be a lie. During previous travels throughout the continent of Africa, I have seen whites disrespect Africans in inexcusable ways. Truthfully, I do not have to travel to see such behavior directed at blacks. It occurs on a daily basis in this nation. Most disconcerting to me is the realization that neither Africans nor blacks would allow someone who looks like them to enter their home, disrespect their history, institutions, and family without issuing a vociferous physical resistance. Trust me when I say that I have hundreds of stories that detail blacks are allowing unconscionable disrespect by non-blacks within both their neighborhoods and institutions. Now, I do not want you to get the impression that the cowardly blacks who receive such treatment are unaware of the alluded to disrespect. Such a conclusion is betrayed by closed-door complaining about whites' disrespectful behavior. Unfortunately for black America, a few of them express their consternation in a face-to-face battle with ungracious guests who have taken blacks' lack of resistance to their boorish behavior to be a sign that this is as much their house as it is ours. At crucial moments when blacks need to stand firm and hold the line, they cower in front of those whose words and actions display their lack of consideration for black liberation. A recent discussion with colleagues employed at an HBCU in the Mid-Atlantic region is particularly revealing. My former classmate who heads a program focused on African-American studies shared with me that he has a white colleague who excelled the program by advising him that it was time that the program shifted its focus from African-American history and turned their focus toward either European or Asian history. Partially amused at the assertion that black America would be better served if its children studied anything other than the traditions and history of their people, I followed with the following question. What was your response? I was not surprised when my former classmate shared that he offered no criticism for the young white professor's desires. However, he had no plans to implement them. It is the silence of black professionals that leads me to conclude that far too many of them behave as idolaters who believe that ungracious, rude, and condescending white guests should not be reprimanded regarding their rude behavior and attitudes. It is saddening and disappointing to see African nations and black institutions being stormed by ungracious guests possessing their personal ideas and plans regarding what the objective should be for those that their ancestors exploited and oppressed at every turn. All the while, so-called black leaders sit on the sideline afraid to say a mumbling word against such actions. Such people are far from leaders and should be considered traitors, as they offer no resistance to what amounts to a hostile takeover of African nations and black institutions. It is time for those who have been trusted with the future of Africa and black America to, in the words of Malcolm X, wake up, clean up, and stand up. Bukusu, my people. Bukusu. And that's the piece right there.
Ashe, many excellent points. Dr. Jones, I want to remind the listeners, if you're listening on your phone, you can push 1 to come into queue and join in the conversation. If you're listening on your phone, you can dial in at 917-889-8059, 917-889-8059, and again, push 1, and I will open up your phone. I guess let's deal with the response or lack thereof first. What do you think the response should have been or could have been with the situation with this so-called missionary? Dr. Jones, you here?
Yes, ma'am. I was on mute. I said they should have arranged for him to go and see his Lord and Savior, white Jesus, immediately. He should have been dining with his Lord before nightfall. There is no way would you ever see the reverse of that.
Mm-hmm.
You would never see. And one thing that I'm a stickler for, the rules being equally applied and fair. And it's amazing to me. And this is, you know, partially of the conversation that I had to break away to have, that the rudest individual that is in our midst actually was rewarded by being told that he has to teach fewer classes than he initially was assigned. they're going to go and hire someone else to teach the class that he isn't going to teach. And the thing is that you're running scared. And you're in many ways, black leadership, the black community, you're that kid at school that ain't going to do shit. You're the one getting bullied. You can talk about all the bullying that you want to. You know, stop bullying, blah, blah, blah. Hell, you getting bullied. When they come around, you shut up. They control if you get that job or not, and you know it. And my thing is, I'm not afraid and not unaware that they're going to make a run at me for my job. That's coming. And never in a world would you see a black man in a black institution being chastised by whites to black leadership, who will then turn around and most likely say, brother, you was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You have no backbone. You have no courage. You know, you can sit there and you can say, well, yeah, you didn't do shit. Your time came, you didn't even speak up. It's cowardice. You know, you can't do what they do, and you know you can't, because they're not going to allow you to do it. Go disrespect their woman like that. Go into their, because if you're talking about being a criminal, you know, I've always thought that, you know, you might want to go and rob and thieve and kill someplace where somebody got something. They're the ones that's got the material resources that you are so hungry for. Go over there and execute that. Do a couple drive-bys. See what happens. You know, and that to me is, you know, it's the reason why I don't want to have conversations with black folk about what they finna do, what they would have done, what they should have done. Because let's be honest, the white man is your God. You'll become an idolater. He controls your economics. He controls how you feel. I got into it with a brother from the National Urban League. You know, one of these, I was the head of the Urban League, and I told him, I said, brother, don't go out in amongst conscious black folk and ever say that again. Well, what's wrong with the Urban League? I said, not only did the Urban League allow urban black America to get run down, hell, y'all allowed it to be stolen. You know how bad you got to be at your job to have land stolen, to have black folk displaced, and you do nothing about it except waiting for the next grant opportunity. Come on. You know, and those are the things that drive me nuts. Because you're allowing people to bully and punk you. And the thing is that right now they've read my piece. And I know they've read it. Because none of them spoke to me today. Do I care? No. I want you to be aware that there is someone at the gate, but the very people that I'm trying to protect are cowards. And with the blatant disrespect that they received, to turn around and then say, well, yeah, you know, we're going to reward you for what you've done by you're going to teach fewer classes. Come on. Is it even possible to defend somebody who doesn't have any courage? That while you're gearing up the defense, they're offering concessions, almost begging these people not to do them in. And it's one of the reasons why I know that when they do come for me, I ain't expecting a black person to say a mumbling word. They're not going to speak against their God. So I'll be out there by myself, being judged by white folks. And I yield.
Ashe, Ashe, anytime we choose to speak truth, especially to those who think they're always right in their arrogance or stupidity or ignorance, whichever, we always seem to get judged more harshly by those who, like you said, look like us, who are the very ones that that we're in a position to be advocating for, speaking with, you know. And you know, I went through it yesterday with collaborative agreement here in Cincinnati. They're in the process of doing some sort of refresh collaborative agreement or something, but the collaborative agreement was sabotaged before the ink dried fully. And those people who said that they were representing the black community failed. Just week before last, we had an 11-year-old get tased by a Cincinnati police officer for stealing, I think she stole like chips and candy out of the local grocery store. And instead of him, you know, doing what he needed to do process-wise, considering this was an 11-year-old girl, he tased her. And, you know, this is just the latest incident, if you will, that has been made public, whereas it's clear that they don't give a piss about the collaborative agreement. They never did. They never had any intentions on adhering to it. Even when you went to file complaints with the Citizens Police Authority, they would ask you very invasive questions on the questionnaire, where with anybody with any sort of revolutionary sense wouldn't even complete the questionnaire because it was so invasive. Like, where do you work at? What's your date of birth, your social security number? I mean, all kinds of invasive questions that are not necessarily required in order to file this complaint. So, you know, but the sister that I addressed the issue with tried to make it about her, and it's not. It wasn't about her. It was about the facts. So it does seem like we are very, I guess, judgmental when it comes to one another versus speaking truth to power, and that's something that definitely has to change. The Urban League here is a joke. NAN is a joke. The NAACP is a joke. And the only way those entities are ever going to change or be dismantled is if we continue to speak truth to them, especially when they need to hear it. So I couldn't agree with you more. I think that you're doing the right thing. It's risky. But in order for things to change, we have to be willing to be vulnerable to the process, as I always say. And I yield back to you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is that, you know, even you know, the way that you phrase it, that it's risky. It further emphasizes my belief that our people are without a doubt running scared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the things that really does need to be discussed within Black America, you know, publicly, is the reality that they ain't scared of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can sit here and you can talk about, oh yeah, you know, them white motherfuckers, they don't know what's up. Oh yes, they do, and they've been bringing it to you for centuries. There is no moment in history that you can point to, okay, where white folk have not kicked ass. There's no moment that you can point to. There's been no population that has been able to be, they're disagreeable to be agreeable with throughout their entire existence. And regardless of how people feel about the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he wasn't off when he characterized them the way that he did. You know, Malcolm said it this way. Malcolm put it like he said, listen, when a white man started talking, he said, I'm boss. He mean I am the boss.
Mm-hmm.
Not one of the bosses. I am boss. They're not joining organizations to not be the head of it. And black leadership understands that you either get down with their program or you're going to be removed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen it far too often. You know, the ideas where you're in a morally superior position. You've defended your people, and your very people will turn on you and say, "But don't you think that was just so harsh?" And so it turns into a situation where, you know, I remember my Uncle Bucky, okay, and he's coming through to me because I'm going through these old photos I have, and my Uncle Bucky had this song that when he would get drunk that he would sing, and if you're white, stick around. If you're brown, you know, if you're white, you're all right. If you're brown, stick around. If you're black, get back. And in many ways, when you look at the decision-making of even black leaders who should be independent, they operate along those same lines. You know, they mute their anger. They suppress, you know, their righteous indignation, because they're still operating out of this falsity that says quite simply that we can nice our way through this. No, you can't. You can't nice your way through this.
Mm-hmm.
Not today, not tomorrow, not ever. Your ancestors, they couldn't nice their way out of the transatlantic slave trade. They couldn't nice them their self, you know, in the Caribbean from being worked to death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to have one of these R&B starlets, you know, re-record Tina Turner's What's Love Got to Do With It and put What's Nice Got to Do With It. And what makes it so much more egregious is that the consideration, the meekness, the mildness that is unleashed for those who come to do them ill will is never doused upon, not even sprinkled upon their own people. And I yield, Queen.
Ashe, I want to bring in the caller, 8028, last of digits, 8028. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Who are we speaking with?
Brother Allen Gang.
Greetings, Brother Allen. How you doing?
What's going on, black man?
I'm blessed. I've been on the whole time, man. I see it's getting heated up here. Getting pretty heated. The call was, I don't even know if I got the right word, so I'll just go with egregious. You know, the video, the audio from the video, I haven't seen it yet. But, you know, since I take your word, that it's probably worse seeing it. But to the point that you were making, Dr. Jones, I remember when I was, you know, coming into my awakening, and I was reading different, you know, books and reading different things, and it hit me as I was attempting to chart my course in terms of the action that I was going to take. And this is maybe about 15 years ago now, when I was an undergrad and I started to, you know, get my hands on Huey's work and you know, works of Frantz Fanon and different, you know, people at that time. I was attempting to figure out, like, okay, not only is this information powerful, but how do I use this information? And one of the things that kind of stuck out to me like a sore thumb was we cannot appeal to a race of people who have shown no sense of morality. We cannot try to appeal to their sense of morality if they've shown that they don't have it. And, you know, to what you're saying, you know, with the whole what does nice have to do with it and different, like, oh, I'm a plead and I'm going to do this. And we tried that, you know. I'm not going to say that was the full aim of what W.E.B. Du Bois was doing, but I often characterize it as, you know, when he was carefully constructing the Harlem Renaissance and his works with the World Fair, the exhibit at the World Fair, we all know that what he was attempting to do was show that our abilities and our talents would make us, you know, be seen as humans. And if that didn't work, and it didn't work back then, and that was the turn of the century, or the turn of the 20th century, then for us to be attempting to still do those type of things as like, hey, well, maybe we could try to nice our way into this or we could try to appeal, it goes back to what you just said. The boss ain't trying to relinquish power. You know, Frantz Fanon talks about power in, you know, the Wretched of the Earth, and there's only a few ways that you can seize it. So, you know, we just know that a lot of our people are not ready to take it to the ways and to the means that Fanon talked about taking it. And it's a shame to see that not only, one, are we not prepared via military to take it that way, but it's also more of a disheartening shame that a lot of people don't read anymore and they just worry about internet memes or internet posts as their source of information. And that's why we see, in my opinion, that's why we see ourselves finding, you know, finding black people not knowing what to say or even willing to speak up because they don't really have a source. They don't know who they really truly are. They just know that they, quote unquote, have some pride based on the shares, the posts they share cannot yield.
You know, the thing is that our people have learned to suffer in silence so efficiently that if you were to look at them, you would think that they were actually happy. And, you know, dealing with Frantz Fanon, you know, it reminds me of this great moment that Huey P. Newton, co-founder of the Black Panther Party, talks about. And he says that it wasn't until he had pulled a gun out on white officers attempting to brutalize him that he really felt that he was free. There is a freeingness, you know, a freedom that is only accessible through standing up for oneself. And if we're not really willing to do that, then, you know, as Malcolm said, don't even use the word revolution. You know, because we're not even talking about revolution when we talk about standing up in your own house. If you're so pitiful that you can't even stand up for yourself in your own house and stand up for those that you know are on your side, then you're a pitiful person. And there's no other way to even talk about it. You're a coward. You know, and it's just what it is. And I yield. And I yield.
I'm sorry, y'all. I thought I was muted. The grandbabies came in. I yield back to you, Brother Allen.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree, Dr. Jones. And we know we have a lot of cowardice, but I think to further your point, a lot of it is due to a lack of knowledge. You know, from the video and you know, like, you know, the situations you speak to that's happening on your campus and just, you know, different situations that I found myself in life. You know, a lot of people think that, you know, it's cool to talk about it in pockets. Oh, man, I'll do this, I'll do that. But when the moment comes, because they don't have that power to stand on what's right, and I think largely because they don't know what is right, they don't feel that they can exert that power. And I think that's what's the preimpetus for cowardice. And a lot of the times, the bigger fight is freeing ourselves from our own black oppression. And what I mean by that is, you know, as you spoke to like the Urban League and things of that nature, freeing ourselves and breaking away are also challenging and confronting, you know, organizations such as those or just, you know, people in situations who are either abusing power by being over authoritative or abusing power by being non-assertive. Whichever the case may be, you know, we're catching, you know, the double hell, because once we get out of our own way, we find ourselves having to confront the situation of, you know, the opposite race, which happens to be, you know, the Caucasian race. And I think that a lot of the times where we start to see the problem, we just have so many people that don't have a clue as to not only how, but why they should confront these situations and why they should, you know, take a stand for themselves And, you know, to me, that's what I find to be the saddest situation. You know, I recently went through a situation, you know, at the place I was working with, and where everybody around me was taking or bailing or, you know, just almost kind of like putting their head down and accepting what, you know, what was given, although they knew it wasn't right. That false sense of security that is provided by a paycheck every 2 weeks or such, and you know, knowing where your source of income, excuse me, is coming from, oftentimes, in my opinion, along with not knowing what's right, you know, gives people this pause to really step out and do what they feel or know to be right. And I think that when you don't believe in your abilities and you've plugged into the matrix that says, hey, you go to work, we're going to pay you every 2 weeks, and you go put into this 401k and, you know, all of the minutiae that they feed us and we often plug into, we find ourselves in those situations. So it not only is it preservation in terms of cowardice, it becomes also just a smack in the face of our race, because we don't know who we are on top of that. So with that, I yield.
You know, Brother Allen, you know, of course I agree with everything that, you know, that you presented. But, it, you know, it's still, as the Louisiana folk would say, it still sticks in my craw that we have so many people in our midst who, you know, are willing to talk a good game. But and they're only talking, let me add this, they only talk in front of majority black audiences. But when it comes to other people, their competition, they ain't got nothing to say. And I'm not equivocating. I'm not arguing. I'm not rationalizing with these people anymore. You know, I've gotten to the point now where I'm kind of like, well, you know what? I'm going to just go ahead and let it go and let them have their way with them. And, of course, I don't do that, because I recognize how high the stakes are, that what we're talking about are fighting over the institutions that Black America has. It infuriates me. Doesn't make me cry anymore. It infuriates me when I go stand in front of a class of Black freshman students and I ask them, how many of you have ever read the autobiography of Malcolm X? Out of 200 students, I may get, if I'm lucky, I may get 3 who will say that they had a parent who had them read it, okay, if I'm lucky. Now, in saying all that, I ask the subsequent question, how many of you read The Diary of Anne Frank? Every hand shoots up. And the excuse behind it is, well, they made us read that in high school. That's my point exactly. And then the fact that you've been dumbed down to the point where you now rationalize this whole situation and say quite simply, well, you know what, if I, no, there's nothing else to say that would excuse away the fact that you knew you weren't being taught anything about your people. You're desiring for that, because that's the reason that you come to an HBCU to be educated, but you still didn't go down to the library and check out Nan book to improve yourself. It's at that point, that's where I'm at, because I'm of the belief and the volition that quite simply the excuse making is over. The question has to be laid in your lap. What did you do? And when you present that to people and you make them have ownership of their inaction, well, then maybe we can start having some moments of reflection. But then again, maybe we won't, because somebody would more than likely try to crack a crass joke. Oh, man, you know niggas ain't trying to read. And everybody else will laugh. because it represents their worldview. It represents what it is they truly think. And in many ways, it represents the community that they hail from. I'm sick of it. I'm absolutely sick of it. And I'm sick of it at the point where I don't want to do even Blog Talk Radio no more. I don't want to write on manhood, race, culture no more. Because regardless of what medium that we put it in, y'all still don't get it. You don't care to get it. You don't have a thirst to get it. And if you don't have a thirst to get it, let's go ahead and talk about what that means. What that really means is that you good where you at. So I'm going to let you be good where you at, and I yield.
No, it's just a bad day on the front, man. Bad day on the battlefield. But we got to stay the course. Got to stay the course because, you know, it's not when they get it. It's the fact that it's available to them for them to get it. You know, early on, and I feel you. I totally feel you, you know, and you've been in the game longer than I have. But one thing I realized that kind of helped me when I was, you know, feel like it seems as if you're feeling right now is realize that all I can do is plant the seed. You know what I mean? It's up for them to water it. But as long as the seeds are available to be planted, then there's always a possibility that the tree will grow. You know what I mean? And as I said, I think the post, you know, it doesn't matter how many times you say it. They only going to hear you when they're ready to listen. You know what I mean? And, you know, your work is not only brilliant, but it's needed. It's timely. You know what I mean? All no pun intended, but just apropos, it's a sign of the times. You know, the things that you're putting out have always resonated with me when I would read them, and you know, I had no indication of them until you know I became a guest on the show before. But I say that to say that I understand. I totally you know feel exactly what you're saying. But you are being the vanguard of not only the culture, but you also being you know. That lighter that ignites people to understand that these possibilities are there. So, I say continue to fight. But two, you know, the question should be at the end of the year, how many people have went to read the autobiography of Malcolm X. And those are the kids who did not go get it are the ones that really truly don't care. Because they could see the parallel between being forced to do something and willingly attempting to learn something. You know, I talk about, previous comment, I talked about how I was first, you know, formulating my opinions and my ideas. And one of the things that really truly got me into my culture and understanding was this young lady's mother. That I knew, her name was Nana Ajua, and she gave me the Ashanti brainwashing test. And you know, the first question was, of course, you know, hey, what's the capital of the United States? And you know, what's the suit? And what year was the Declaration of Independence? And I, you know, out of 20 questions, I might have got 19 right. You know, first question on the other side of it, well, you know, what's the capital of the first African country? To gain its independence. You know, the phone got silent because I had no idea, you know. Okay, who was the first president of Ghana? You know, just all these different questions that let me know that I was being brainwashed. Now, I never failed that test again, but sometimes it's up to, you know, you and others to expose other individuals to what they don't know. So although it's not the will isn't there, the material is there, so it still needs to be available, you know, and it's going to take the right mind to spark that change, you know, when, you know, Queen played Tupac and then Dead Prez, it was funny that you talked about you sat on the panel with M1, because I was able to sit on the panel with M1 a few years back, but, you know, Tupac always talked about how he was going to spark the brain that changed the world, so your work might be the one that sparks that brain that changes the world. So I just urge you to keep going, you know, Doc, with what you're trying to do because I think it's great, and I yield.
I definitely appreciate those words, brother, but, hey, the harvest is plenty, but the workers are few. And I yield with that.
Ashe, we're a little bit past the top of the hour. We're going to go about another 20 minutes here tonight on Sign of the Times. And I just want to toss this into the conversation by this being Black August, a quote from George Jackson. It says, patience has its limits. Take it too far, and it's cowardice. So, you know, it's freeing to speak truth to power. It's freeing to liberate ourselves from those mental chains that we know that they've been placing on our brains once they took them off of our legs. But it's a whole other thing when you actually put them both together and start to move forward in a way that's going to be productive and not make you look as though you're willing to speak truth to one end of the element but not the other. So hang out with us. You're listening to Sign of the Times Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by New Power Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Bone of this country built on black bones. Timeline soaked in blood, I hear my ancestors singing bleed in the water as we tread through this flood. I want to feel free, but the lines of my poems are haunting me. Black bones.
Every day reminded that I was born against the grain. In a world where the heart is so easily frozen. Collectively, ours were dropped and broken to a million pieces. Fragmented life, that's us. More often than not, I hear my brother say, ain't no love in the city, not in the heart. So how do we love in spite of those who don't mean to offend but do? We're just black and brown mixed in this American stew. And that was all we loved.
Black bones.
Looking up to the heavens from a world of scars. Conflicting ideologies created by men. Tainted by sin. None of us as modest and clean as we might have been. So where's the love and mercy then?
Black bones. Silence has become louder than a cry for justice. Desensitized and no longer than just a numbness. Too many blind sheep comfortable in their mental cells with no intentions of making bail. When I'm here to remind you, cells become tombs too. And I heard a prophet say that your silence won't protect you, black bones.
Each decade we change directions, only to end up empty-handed with American dreams. Cause black smoke and black screens is all I ever seen on this American scene. Sitting alone like that character in the movie The Passenger, I was asking, have you ever watched life as time was passing you by? Taking snapshots of fading glory. Got me pinning verses 151 to, and diving from the rooftops of clouds to digging deeper. Mentally, I was thinking, slavery was legal.
Black bones.
They made illegal, and prison was created as a sequel to regulating lives and making money off of the poor people. Now with children's future, now more than ever, dangle over the flames of disaster like the true meaning of Gatorade. Little ones catching life sentences without chances for parole. Just cold justice on that railroad from school to prison. In society thinking that we ain't in prison because we ain't in prison. I'm just pinning the truth and defending it. Laughing like the joke on the Suicide Squad because it's like we really ain't got no voice. We really ain't got no choice.
Black bones. Black bones.
Check out the Chainstorm Poets. You can find them on YouTube as well as on Facebook and social media. That title of their joint was Black Bones, and it takes us through our history as we know it. So welcome back, Dr. Jones and Brother Allen. If you're listening on your phone, you can dial in. You can push 1, and I'll open up your mic. If you're listening on your computer, you can dial in at 917-889-8059, 917-889-8059. So, brothers, I would like to yield to you all to, you know, wrap up. We've got about 20 more minutes left to wrap up tonight's conversation, if we can, with some direction. I had the honor and pleasure of attending Brother Rashad's Birdsong event for the 32nd reunion, Black Film Reunion in Pittsburgh. And it was very empowering to be around vanguards, if you will, from the original Panther Party, both male and female. But it was specifically empowering to meet the females who helped bring forth, if you will, the revolutionary mindset with the successes that were able to be accomplished by the original Panther Party. So I'd like to yield to you all for, you know, a recap of tonight's conversation and possibly some direction on where you all foresee us going, or at least having the next conversation to be able to push our agenda forward. And I yield.
Well, the conversation tonight revolved around the disgusting act of a quote-unquote white missionary in Uganda, and it flowed further towards the idea that black folk are being too permissive in regards to what they will accept inside of their own house, inside of their own institutions. That's where it is, and I yield.
To me, the you know, I'm piggybacking. I think that was the start of the conversation, and I think we discussed more so how that spills over to the same attitudes being exemplified here in, you know, here in America, and we kind of discussed more so some of the reasons we feel as if we're seeing the situations that we do see. I think we all agree that we are being, you know, more than even permissive. You know, we're just being accepting. And not only are we accepting it, you know, it's basically making a lot of people comfortable in terms of other races to treat us as such. You know what I mean? As a football coach, one of the things that I like to talk about and I always discuss is if you permit it, you promote it. So a lot of the times I think that we all agree we are permitting it and therefore we are promoting it. And we know that this behavior is non-acceptable, but to further the point made by, you know, Dr. Jones, not only is it non-acceptable, we have a lot of people who are failing for whatever reason to speak up and step up and say something about it. And beyond that, they're not even attempting to improve themselves and understand what it truly means to be black in America. And, you know, Dr. Jones gave one of my favorite Malcolm quotes, you know, everything south of the Canadian borderline is the South. So we need to stop differentiating as if, you know, escaping to the North as it was during the slavery time was a better fit for us. No matter where we go now in the climate of, and I don't even want to say the climate of school, of people getting shot by the cops, because, you know, being that I understand this never stopped. It just happened to get more popularized through social media and cell phone footage. So it was never like, oh, this is the climate and this is what we're seeing now. No, it's just being broadcast more. What local news could once vary, social media is broadcasting to a much larger society. And being that social media is able to broadcast to a much larger society, we are seeing more and more of what has always been. Sister Ida B. Wells, she did 100 years of lynchings, and she was able to record for years and years the lynchings that were taking place. You know, so there's also just been, you know, a climate in which we've always had our brothers and sisters, you know, being killed for little to nothing, or, you know, and I think that that's one thing that we got to, you know, be sure to not act as if, oh, this is a new phenomenon. It's just, it's been America, you know, to use, you know, the video, the title of the video, This is America. I mean, it's just sad that not only are we not speaking up or saying anything or advocating for ourselves in a lot of instances, it's sad that this epidemic is being exacerbated because of the way we're accepting things in America. We see it with the incident as it is in Uganda, and with that, I yield.
You know, my thing is, it's most certainly obvious that I'm frustrated with this entire situation. My question, and it's the ever-present, the omnipresent question, what is it going to take for black folk to get angry enough to mobilize themselves, to make a move to protect themselves and build something for themselves? because the shooting down of black men in the street is not sufficient. The exploitation of black folk economically to the point where it is impossible for you to spend all of your money at a black-owned establishment in most areas. Where are you going to get your gas at? Where are you going to get your groceries at? You know, and we have all of these moments, these many people refer to them as microaggressions. I would term them colossal aggressions, where if we were talking about a wrestling match, we would be pinned to the mat, getting stomped on, and nobody's coming to save us. So in those conditions, it appears as if, you know, even that's not enough. You know, we sit back and we talk about this being Black August, and we talk about the, you know, the great man-child warrior, Jonathan Jackson, and, of course, his brother George, and the way that both of those brothers were killed, murdered. And even with that information out there, accessible to anyone, you can watch Jackson's story for free on YouTube. They're not interested. You know, Booker T. Washington talked about this in his epic speech that people derisively refer to as the Atlanta Compromise. Washington says quite simply that, you know, our people are more concerned with the superficial googles of life. And, you know, we can sit here all day and we can strategize and we can say, well, you know, white folk going blah, blah, blah. Quit worrying about white folk. If we did our jobs, we wouldn't have to even worry about white folk ever. And the things that we're calling for our people to do, which is quite simply read black literature, read black history, read it for yourself. Go beyond a mere video, a YouTube video that somebody did that's half-brained and most likely not correct in its content. Start black businesses. Have some faith in yourself. It's in many ways shameful that we have a situation where black folk will go and fill out a job application someplace to get a job to apply some skills that they already have to allow a white man to tell him where to go if he's a plumber. Go over there and work on their plumbing and bring me the money back, boy, and I'll give you a little bit of it. Instead of saying, well, I'm a plumber, let me start my own business. Black folk got houses. Black folk need plumbing. Need plumbing done. But nevertheless, that never becomes a realistic option. You know, and it's one of the reasons for me that I'm a constant stickler for African-American studies. Because if you politicize and imbue a plumber with a politicized mind, that plumber looks at the world through a different lens. But until we get to that point, you know, we're just talking, you know, and we've had Frederick Douglass, we've had Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, you know, Ida B. Wells, Honor Julia Cooper, Du Bois, Garvey, Elijah Muhammad, Noble Drew Ali, you know, the list continues to go on and on and on. You've had all these prophets who have, in many ways, although it may be culturally or religiously a little slightly different as far as the plan goes, but the plan is always the same. And the result is always the same. Black folk don't apply it, not scientifically. And that's why when black folk decide that they want to get something to eat in Harlem tonight, they're probably going to go to a Chinese-owned restaurant. When black folk in Philly decide that they want a Philly cheesesteak, they got to go over there to the white folk to get it. Black folk in Houston, Texas, you want some fried chicken? Go on over there to Timmy Chan's. They got about 18 different locations in this city. They're getting all the fried chicken money, and what they ain't getting chicken and rice number 1 through 10 are getting. And they're owned by people, by non-black people. So in every way, it's pitiful. We are a pitiful people. We're directionless. We're not following scientific revolutionary thought. We ain't got the basics. If Huey P. Newton was alive today, Huey would say, listen, we're still in a survival mode. We're trying to teach you survival strategies to keep you from being a further victim of the continuation of the 400-year African Holocaust. That's where we are with pitiful, sad, sorry. But we damn sure can rap the latest rap video. Our kids, they look good when they went to school this week. Yeah, they look good adorned in clothes that were bought by black dollars at a white mall. And I yield with that. I'm just disgusted with black people.
Ashe, before we close out, I just want to, contribute to the fact that things are starting to change in this city, and it's been a process. It's been a very painful process, but I must say, for the progress that we are able to make, it's been worth it. Unfortunately, we have a tendency to gravitate towards what's popular versus standing in the trenches to do what's right. And it's not been easy. It's not been easy for those that came before us. But hopefully what we're doing now is going to make it easier for those who are coming behind us to continue to do this work. Because regardless of where we are today, we know that tomorrow, unless we do something to change it, things are not going to change. So I just want to, let everybody know that we appreciate your time and your commitment to be on Sign of the Times. We appreciate you, Dr. Jones, for the contributions that you have made for, the past 5 years here on the air. And know that regardless of what it is that you continue to do from this point forward, you can't change who you are in your core. And we all get frustrated with the progress of things at times. But the thing is that once we know who we are down to our ultima wazoo, we keep pushing forward anyway. So I want to thank you, Dr. Jones. Thank you, Brother Allen, for being a part of tonight's conversation. Thank you to those who just chose to hang out and listen. We appreciate your energy, too. We're going to be here live tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we're going to go into more of the discussion of the challenge that's out here to protect black women. We're going to have on as a guest Brother T. Ford out of Atlanta to continue to turn up, if you will, the attention that that particular campaign needs and deserves because, we can only stand out here so far as women. We still need our brothers to support us and to have our backs and vice versa. So, in the meantime, between time, if you need us, give us a call. 513-913-2691 is the number. And again, we'll be here tomorrow night, everybody, making a difference, one conversation at a time, turning the struggle into a strategy by applying those elements. So we love you. We thank you. And most of all, we appreciate and respect you. We'll see you tomorrow night, everybody. Salute.
Peace.
Something for my godson Elijah and a little girl named Corinne. To say the black of the best, the sweet of the juice. I say the dark of the flesh and the deep of the roots. I give a holler to my sisters on welfare. Tupac can, if don't nobody else can. And I know they like to beat you down a lot. And when you come around the block, brothers clown a lot. So please don't cry, dry your eyes, never let up. Forgive, but don't forget, girl, keep your head up. And when he tells you you ain't nothing, don't believe him. And if you can't learn to love you, you should leave him. Cause sister, you don't need him. And I ain't trying to gash up, I just call him how I see. You know what makes me unhappy? When brothers make mates and leave a young mother to be a cat. And since we all came from a woman, got our name from a woman, and I came from a woman. I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women, do we hate our women? I think it's time we kill for our women.
real to our women. And if we don't, we'll have a race of babies that will hate the ladies and make the babies. And since a man can't make one, he has no right to tell a woman when and where to create one. So will the real men get up? I know you're fed up, lady, but keep your head up. I remember Marvin Gaye used to sing to me. He had me feeling like black was the thing to be. And suddenly the ghetto didn't seem so tough. As though we had it rough, we always had enough. I hopped up about my curfew and broke the roof. Went with the local crew and had a smoke or two. I realized mama really paid the price. She nearly gave her life to raise me right. And all I had to give her was my life dream. And how I rock the mic and make it to the light screen. I'm trying to make a dollar out of. My buddy lost his whole family. It's gonna take the man in me to conquer this insanity. It seems the rain will never let up. I try to keep my head up and still keep from getting wetter. You know it's funny when it rains, it pours. They got money for wars, but can't feed the poor. Said it ain't no hope for the youth, and the truth is it ain't no hope for the future. And then they wonder why we crazy. I blame my mother for turning my brother into a black baby. We ain't meant to survive, cause it's a setup. By your lonesome, thanks the Lord for my kids, even if nobody else want them. Cause I think we can make it, in fact, I'm sure. And if you fall, stand tall and come back for more. Cause ain't nothing worse than when your son wants to know why daddy don't love him no more. You can't complain, you was dealt this hell of a hand without a man feeling helpless. Because there's too many things for you to deal with. Dying inside, but outside you're looking big. While the tears is rolling down your cheek, it's daddy hoping things. Cause if it did, you couldn't take it. And don't blame me, I was given this world, I didn't make it. And now my son's getting older.